Well, I hope you're excited to be back. I'm excited to be back. Believe it or not, this is the 240th installment of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm glad you're here, whether you're a repeat member of the congregation or somebody you just found the show. It'd be interested how you found the show if you're new. I'd be interested to hear how that is. I'm glad you're here. If you are new, we do have a Christian-specific segment that's very roughly in the middle part of the show. Very roughly. And I encourage you to stick around for that. Don't just turn it off and be like, I don't need to be listening to no dang preaching. I don't want to. Give it a listen. It might be better than you think. I have a lot of people say they get stuff out of it. Even people that say they're not particularly believers, they get something out of it. So I encourage you to check that out. But be that as it may, I will let you know when we shift into that. So if you absolutely don't want to hear it, then you don't have to. I ain't pushing it on you. But I do encourage you to check that out. Either way, I am glad you're here this week. I think we're going to have a great show. I'm always excited. I was laying in bed last night. I'm excited. Looking forward. Doing the show. I mean, I'm doing the Monday Daily Nationalist, the Friday Daily Nationalist now. It's extra work, you know, in Sven's absence. And I enjoy doing those well and good enough. But this is still what I do. You know, this is still brings me here. I mean, this is my show. This is the show. I mean, the Daily Nationalist is Sven's show. I'm just filling in his absence. Make no, that's pretty obvious. If you listen, pretty obvious I'm the substitute teacher, not the PhD. I'm just filling in. This is my show. This is what I do. 240 times now. This is what I do. So I was looking forward to it. There is nothing better. There's nothing behind a paywall. If you get something out of the show, I ask you to throw something in the plate. I do pass the offer and play around. It's easy. I make it probably easy as anybody, probably easier than anybody. Go to the description page for the show here on Radio Album. If you're listening to the show, I assume that's where you're at anyway. Look at the description. You don't have to read the description of what the show's about. You're going to listen to the show. You already know what the show's about. Those descriptions, they're sometimes pretty low effort because when I'm writing them out, I'm like, well, they're going to listen to the show anyway. I just give them a general idea what the show's about. Nobody reads it. So I put low effort in. Sometimes I put little funny things in there. Y'all don't even know because you don't read it. Nobody reads the description. But look at the description. I got snail mail. It doesn't get any easier than that. You know, it doesn't. Don't come at me like, I don't know how I can. I'd like to send you a few bucks, but I just don't know how. Look, figure out how to address an envelope. Got Bitcoin. Got Monero. Got an email address so you can drop your notes there. If you've got different cryptocurrency, drop me an email. I can get you an address for that. That having been said, let's do this. We gotta keep this show up. We got a lot to cover today. I'm feeling we got a lot to cover. Probably gonna run long, but you're not even gonna notice because it's gonna be so fun. Let's do the listener supporter mailbag. GPD, more dough for the show. Thank you, Mr. T. Every week I do appreciate it, Mr. T. Every week. So it's like if I don't see anything, I usually know that the post office is just doing post office-y things. But, you know, then I'm like, you know, hope nothing happened to him. You know, Grandpa, I got a lot of crazy stuff going on lately. It's cost me all my savings, plus put me into some debt. But I'm going to try to keep on soldiering on and continue to support all the creators that I normally support. I'm also optimistic about my ability to recover and then some. Always enjoying the show. Thank you for all you're doing, holding it together for Sven and Radio Albion. And that's from Andy. And I do appreciate it, Andy. You know, it is. It's life like that. You know, ups and downs and I don't get into my own. I won't sit here and whine about my own, you know, financial issues, but I'm going to tell you, I feel you, you know, I feel you. And I just, yeah, all you can do, you know, at the end of the day, that's all you can do is just pick up when things like this happen, when things come around. You know, at some point in time, you got to dust yourself off and you get up and you keep moving forward. That's all you can do. I hate debt. You know, I do. I hate debt. Usury should be outlawed. I hate debt. It's so oppressive. You read the debt numbers, how much debt. I don't mean like the government debt, but I mean like debt people are in. And people are all on these various levels of debt, and most of them are buried in debt. It creeps up on you. They get you. They get you like that. And it's always sad to me when I hear stories about, you know, because people, debt makes people lose their perspective of the world around them. It really does. You'll hear about people, for instance, I was reading a article one time, and this woman, she's like a financial advisor type of person. And this was back, I think this was back around the housing crisis and around 08, you know, and everybody, a lot of people were getting their homes foreclosed on and stuff. And was reading this interview with this woman, and she said, you know, she says, it doesn't make any sense. But she says, people will come to me and tell me, you know, how they're in all of this financial trouble and they're fixing to lose their house. They'll tell me, she says, about how they're 3 months behind on their house payments. But then they'll follow that up with telling me that they're current, though, but I'm current on all my credit cards. My credit cards are all up to date. And she says, the first thing she tells them is that's backwards. And the advice she gave in this interview, she's like, you know, if you get into this problem, she said, the first thing you quit paying for is credit cards, because they can't take anything. You know, they can bitch and moan and harass you and all of that. But she's like, you know, it doesn't make any sense. She said, don't come to me and talk about you're current on your credit cards, but you're 3 months behind on your mortgage payments. She's like, that's backwards. They suck you in. They suck you in. Because see, people get into financial trouble and they think it's temporary. So they use their credit card because they just got to get by as a stopgap, and then they'll make up for it. But sometimes it drags out longer than they expect. And then it's in, they suck you in. It's all a trap. They know it's a trap. It's not an accident. They know it is. They entrap you in this. I hate it when I read about people that get, like, it destroys their life. You know, they get buried in debt, and people will let it get to them to the point where they kill themselves. You know what I mean? That's not an uncommon thing. People will get buried in debt and they'll kill themselves because they just don't see a way out. Well, there's an easy way out. Don't pay the son of a bitches. You have my permission. Don't pay them. Piss on them. What are they going to do? They can't put you, they still can't put you in jail. They want to, and the day is probably coming when they'll do that, but not yet. I mean, really, you ready to kill yourself? I'm not saying you are, Andy. You gave me the excuse to go off on this. You ready? You were down and despondent and hate life and can't drag your ass out of bed in the morning and can't see a reason to go on living because of debt. I got the answer. Quit paying them. Piss on them. They've created this mindset in people that they've got to, you know, like, you have some moral obligation, you know? The MCC has kind of conspired with this a little bit, but the messaging is, if you're a good person, you pay your bills. Well, yeah, if I borrow $40 from my friend or a family member, I'm going to make damn sure I pay them back. If you owe $40,000 to Citibank on your credit card that they're charging you 30% interest on with the excuse of it's unsecured debt. Piss on them. You do not have a moral obligation to Bank of America or whoever the hell else. They want you to think so. And people are drugged down by this moral dilemma. I owe these bills and I will be a bad person if I don't pay JP Morgan Chase. You're free. Piss on them. Don't pay them. You can be free. Remember, usury is illegal in both the Bible and the Quran. You don't have a moral obligation to these usurers. Of course, it's best not to get in that position to begin with, but it's pretty hard to do sometimes in this society. Let's see. What else? We got one more here. Well, I actually have two more, but the other one I'm going to do in listener support or mailbag. So I got one more here. Dan, hope all is well down in Texas. I'm a couple years older than you. I don't know if it's age or tired spirit. I have small projects around the house to do, but I don't have the drive to do them. I'm single, so I have to do all the housework, yard work, shopping, etc. I try to stay in shape. I work out 3 days a week, plus I work. When I get the things done that I need to do, I don't have the drive to do the extra things I would like to do. I'm concerned that things are not going to get any easier, but I feel I'm running out of steam. It seems that the faithful to God is getting older. There's not many younger people to pick up the torch. Always like to hear your thoughts on matters. Is it me or is this normal? Do you feel the same way at times? God bless you and yours. And that's from Tony. Thank you very much, Tony. Let me just say, you know, you're not the only one. I just turned 56 recently. I did. I just turned 56. For those of you who are wondering, maybe you fairly new and you're like, well, how old is this guy? I'm an early Xer. And I just turned 56 recently. It's funny because the older you get, you know, birthdays don't mean anything. You know, when you turn 56, people have to remind you, you know, when you turned 18 back in the day when you turned 18. I'm going to get to the listener topic here in a minute, but I got to go off on my tangents. Y'all know this. When you turned 18, it was a big deal. I'm 18. Yay. When you turn 56, people be like, oh, hey, it's your birthday. Happy birthday. And you're like, huh? Who's? Oh, yeah. Or you have like family members and they forget it's your birthday. And then like a month later, they're like, hey, it was your birthday last week. I'm so sorry. I didn't send you a card or anything. You're like, don't worry about it. I forgot it. I forgot it too. As we get older, it's important. And I'm going to get into something that may mean something to you. I don't know. In a minute, bear with me. It may get deep. I don't know. As we get older, I think it's important to do what you can do. You know, because like the saying goes, if you don't use it, you lose it. If you physically can do everything you can do, try to do as much physically as you can, because as we get older, it's going to get worse. We are just literally incapable. I've already lost a lot of physical ability to do things. With my first cancer surgery, you know, it was the cancer on my leg was right by my knee, and the lymph node they took out to test, they removed a lymph node. And so it was the lymph node attached to my knee. And your lymph nodes, for those who don't know, is what allows your body to drain uphill. That's why you don't walk around looking like Grimace from McDonald's, you know, like a bean bag or something. Your lymph nodes drain things uphill. So gravity, you pushes up against gravity. Well, that lymph node that's connected to my knee is gone now. So if I'm on my feet for a long, you know, a decent amount of time, especially if it's real hot outside, my knee swells up, poof, you know, and then I'm all hobbling around. I look silly. So I, you know, I have to adjust myself accordingly. It's not a big deal. I'm not whining about it. And it's not debilitating. You know, I go in where it's cool. And if I put my feet up for a while, it goes back down. It's not a big deal. My shoulder is shot. I mean, I can still move my arm, but it's extremely painful. There's certain ways I move it. It's like having an ice pick. Those things are only going to get worse as you get older. So you do what you can do now, because it's going to get worse. And that's just as things wear out. So while you can, you want to do everything you can, because it will hold it off. If you don't use them, things atrophy and you start losing the ability to do stuff. A lot of times, like the other day, I have an old pile of brush out there. And it's the day before the dumpster comes in. I'm going to cut up this brush. I'm trying to get rid of it little by little. We had such a long dry summer. There's a long burn ban. I never could burn anything. And besides, it's a pain. You got to stand out there. Even when they lift the burn ban, you stand out there with it. Breathe cedar smoke. And I don't feel like doing that. So I just go out there and cut it up little by little. It's the day before the dumpster's going to dump. So I want to cut some of this brush up. But it was hot that day. I didn't feel like it. I mean, I really didn't feel like it. And I had to make myself go out there and cut this brush. It's hot, I'm sweating, got my little chainsaw out there cutting this brush, putting in the truck, putting in the dumpster. And I had to whip myself, basically, to get myself to go out there and do this. But you know what? By the time I was done, I felt so much better. You know, I don't know how to explain it. It's like when you're sick and you feel real bad and you get a fever and then you sweat it out and then all of a sudden you feel better. It's like that. It's like force yourself sometimes to do some of these things. And then once you do them, you feel so much better and you feel like you accomplished something. So sometimes you just got to make yourself those times you're talking about when, you know, you just don't have the drive. You just try making yourself do it and you're liable to feel better afterwards. Then you realize when that time comes around and it's like, well, I don't really feel like doing that. You realize that, well, if you make yourself do it, you're going to feel better afterwards. You just got to push yourself over that limit, or I should say, you know, over that, I don't know, that barrier. Just push yourself over that barrier. Make yourself do it. And you'll feel better because you did. And look, I feel you. I really do. I mean, you know, I'm not single, but I spend the vast majority of my waking hours by myself. I do shopping. I do all these things you're talking about. All that stuff, I do the same thing. Aside from the production staff here for Radio Albin, which is my dogs, I spend the vast majority of my waking hours by myself. Some people that bothers, some people it doesn't. It doesn't bother me too much. It doesn't bother me much. But I do, I feel where you're coming from. Getting older, and I'm sorry if you're younger, you know, this may be boring to you, but stick with me because it'll pertain to you before you know it. Like I said, I just recently turned 56. And what I've been really striving for is always the truth. You know, Jesus said the truth will set you free. And I don't think that just means talking about, you know, accepting him and being saved. I mean, I take that as literally the things that you burden you, that things that burden you in your life. The truth is the answer. If you get to the truth of those things, whether it's dealing with sin in your life, you know, get to the truth of why you do that and face those truths. I try to deal with everything and the truth. And I'm finding that the truth is the answer. Like, for instance, with aging, what I've come to realize in seeking the truth is that I don't have very much longer in this world. I'm not going to be here very much longer. And that's fact. And I say that, and people are always like, man, you're depressing. You know, no, what are you saying? You got a long time. No, I don't. The truth is, I'm not going to be here much longer. Now, I just turned 56. The average lifespan is, what, 74, 76 years old. Let's say 76 years old. If I make it to the average, and that's setting aside that I've had two cancer surgeries in the last year and a half, setting that aside, if I make it to the average, 76, that's 20 years from now. If you listen to this and you're 24, you're like, that's a long time. If you're listening to this and you're my age, you're like, that's not very long, is it? I remember 20 years ago was nothing. I mean, it really is nothing. If you look back and actually pin it down, hey, that happened 20 years ago, you're like, that can't be right. And you got to look again. There's no way that's been 20 years since that happened. It just seemed like yesterday. So knowing that 20 years ago wasn't that long ago, 20 years from now, and more or less, honestly, a best case scenario, 20 years from now isn't very long. So as a result, I understand this truth that I don't have very long left on this world. When I got my first cancer diagnosis, you know, and I didn't know how this was going to turn out. God has blessed me so far. I mean, you know, we're still good on this. I got another scan to do. I keep putting them off, and the doctor gripes at me. He's like, you're supposed to be doing these every 4 months. I'm like, y'all want $3,500 a pop every time I do it. I don't have the money. You're going to get them twice a year at best. At best. I got another one coming up, and it may get put off again because I don't have the money. I'm not whining about mine. I'm just telling you. But, you know, everything keeps coming back good. But when I first had the first cancer diagnosis, and, you know, you don't know. When they drop the C word on you, it's just like, you know, I mean, it just reverberates. And not knowing how it was going to turn out, and it made me really think about, you know, okay, what if I've got a year left to live? And I made the determination that however long I had to live, if it's a year, 6 months, 5 years, whatever the case may be, I wanted to finish strong. I wanted to live. I wanted, as Paul says in the Bible, you know, I want to run the race. I want to finish. I want to finish with my head held high. I want to complete this deal. I want to grow as far as I can in the faith. And when I'm done, I want to leave this world in faith. I don't want to fall apart at the end and start bitching out and crying and being like scared to death to move on. I want to move on with my dignity. Now, again, God has blessed me, and my last scan that I had earlier this year, still coming back. No, they don't see anything going on. But again, when you realize that 20 years isn't very long, if I live to be 76 years old, no one's going to say, he died so young. 20 years isn't nothing. So I still realize I don't have that much time left. So I still, the realization I had back then is what I got now, which is that I want to finish strong. I want to finish as strong as I possibly can. I want to spend what little time I have left, however long that is, whether, like I say, I just live my life out and die quietly, whether it's in some sort of Mad Max chaos world, you know, fighting for food. I don't know. I just want to finish as strong as I can. oh man, and even if I got 20 years, that's still not very long. I want to grow as far as I can in the spirit and finish as strong as I can. And that's my attitude. Anyway, that's my attitude about it. And that's the way I'm trying to approach life. And it's really helped me. And I'm sharing, that's the reason I'm sharing is because this has been really, understanding this truth has been really helpful to me. And I hope it'll be helpful for you, Tony, and anybody else that's getting up in age to realize, to get to the truth. Most of the things that trouble us or things we got going on, the truth, Jesus said, the truth will set you free. The truth is the answer. And you got to figure out, okay, what truth am I needing to figure out? What's the nature of the truth I need to understand? And for me, dealing with the reality of aging and not having, you know, is to grasp this truth that there's not much time left. I don't have forever. So I need to let go of these things of the past, quit pretending, you know, like I need to hold on to things that are for younger men. And grab a hold of the things that are for men who are getting older. Wisdom, knowledge, understanding, and sharing these things with others and accepting these new points of my life. You know, you're talking about single, you know, dating and all that crap. That's for younger people. It's for younger people. Just accept the new stages of your life and keep moving forward. That's all any of us can do. It's like the truth gets you to the point to where when you think about it at first, you're like, oh my gosh, I don't have that much long to live. Oh, that's so scary. But then when you really get closer to the truth, it's like, hey, I've almost got this thing whipped. You know, it's like if you had to sit down and take a big, long written test and you're getting all, you know, you're getting so tired because you've been taking the test. And then you step back from it and look and it's like, hey, I'm almost done with this thing. I've almost got this whipped. Anyway, I hope that helps. I hope that helps. So yeah, everything you're feeling going on, that's normal. I guess long way of answering the question, which is what you usually get from me. You know, I like to think about things and I was thinking the other day, one of the things, if you could ask people like in a vacuum, if you could ask white people in a vacuum, if you asked white people in a vacuum where they wouldn't get in trouble, you could assure them that nobody, you're not going to get canceled. You can answer this question honestly. Nobody's listening. Just answer the question honestly. And if you asked white people who felt like they could answer the question honestly, what's the number one thing that bugs you, that you dislike about black people? You see, you people will feel uncomfortable even hearing that question because they're conditioned. You're not allowed to not like anything about black people, which is silly. There's things about white people that black people don't like. But if you could ask them, if you could ask white people in a vacuum, in a padded room, soundproof room, I think the number one thing they would say is like criminal behavior, you know? It's not the color of the skin. It's not even their culture per se. I mean, they can live how they want to. If they answered honestly, I think it would be criminal behavior. You know, the tendency towards criminal behavior. And, you know, that's fair enough. You know, we listen to, you know, pro-white people and they will talk about, you know, the crime statistics about black people. Everybody, you listen to this, you're probably fairly familiar with government statistics about criminality in the quote-unquote black community. And that's all well and good. That's fine. But you see, I'm interested in the flip side of that. You know, one of the things Sven really liked to harp on, and I think he's absolutely correct on, is that, you know, you're going to change the way other people are. You know, so I mean, it's fine to understand and acknowledge, you know, these things like, you know, okay, well, according to the government's own statistics, there's a criminality problem in the black community. You turn on, you see these videos and you got these roving games of youths, teens, and they happen to all be black people. And they go in and clear all the shelves out of these stores. I mean, it's pretty hard to deny that that is an issue. And that's all well and good. And that's all well and good, but you're not going to change that. I mean, you could lessen it. Obviously, some of this is a lot of what you're seeing now we didn't have before. Well, it's because of government policy. But that's not the point I want to get into today. Sven's point was always we should be working on ourselves. I mean, don't quit worrying about what every other group is doing. I mean, it's fine to realize that and acknowledge that. But what are we doing? And I absolutely agree with him. And I think a lot of people have failed to understand what he was trying to say with that. I look at white people Because, you could look at, like criminality, the tendency, criminality, the crime problem in the black community. That's all well and good. But what's the inverse of that for white people? Because white people have an inverse version of that. And I call it badge licking. I hate badge lickers, by the way. This is my opportunity to go off on a tangent about badge lickers. And I think you understand pretty clearly what I'm talking about when I talk about badge lickers. And badge lickers are always going to be white people. I mean, it is. It's a white person thing. And I think a lot of this badge licking behavior comes from the fact that they can't openly say that they don't like the fact that there's a problem with a tendency towards criminality in the black community. They're not allowed to say that. So what they do is they do this other thing and basically suck up to the cops. That's their way of saying, pointing to like crime problems from the black community without saying it. I think that's where some of that comes from. But it gets wound up taken to this weird extreme. You know what I'm talking about? Like, you see people on the internet that are so extreme in their badge licking that it's like they could come home and catch some guy banging their wife and they would be mad. And then they would look and they would see there's a cop uniform off there and he would just stop and be like, "Thank you for your service, sir," while he's hitting that. Not trying to be vulgar, but it is. It's like that extreme. Like, they will make excuses for the cops no matter what. And that's what I mean. It's like this inverted thing. I mean, yeah, you can look at black crime all day long, and that's easy because you're pointing at somebody else. But the weird inversion of that is this badge-licking, badge-worshipping weirdo behavior that white people do. And I find, honestly, in a lot of ways, just as sickening. I mean, what is that? We used to not do that, by the way. Go back and watch some old movies like Convoy, some old movies from the 70s, like the original Smokey and the Bandit or Convoy. See, this is the way white people used to regard the cops, as kind of a joke. You know, they weren't worshiping them. You look at those movies like Convoy, I'm sounding old, like Convoy or Smokey and the Bandit. You couldn't make a movie like that now because you're making fun of our heroes, the police. The only way the cops get mocked in entertainment and media today is if they're portrayed as evil and racist instead of just basically like incompetent grifters. Watch those movies. If you're young and you've never watched the original Smokey and the Bandit, watch that. You know, just watch that. That's the way white people used to actually kind of regard the cops in general. I do. I find this badge-licking behavior to be very disgusting. I was watching a video the other day, and I don't know if y'all ever watch any of those videos from like the Arkansas State Police. And those guys are crazy. Like, they're crazy about, they will, you know, like you hear some places like, you know, they tell the cops don't go chasing people down, you know, and they have like a no pursuit policy. Like, Arkansas State Police is like the inverse of that. They're like the opposite world of that. They not only are going to chase any and everybody, they're looking for an excuse to chase any and everybody, and they will like try to kill you. They will kill you if they got it. And they will like run people. You watch some of these videos and like people are driving down the road minding their own business, and this Arkansas State Trooper is chasing somebody for whatever reason, and they will like run you off the road. They did like zeroed in tunnel vision. And of course, like a lot of this stuff, a lot of these pursuits, you know, at the end of the pursuit, they wreck the car off the road and black people get out and the cops are cussing at them and yelling. And I always find that amazing. Like, you're supposed to be professional, you know, you're on video and they're out there screaming, you know, effing this and effing that and waving their gun around. And then it's like, bruh, this is like, this could be shown in court. You're not exactly looking professional. But you see, most of the time they're arresting black people. So, the badge slickers like that because they can applaud and suck up to the cops without being racist. Anyway, I saw one of these videos because a lot of times, like, you know, they just do this like to chase like a speeder. I saw a video the other day and that, this cop is taking off to catch a speeder and you never see the speeder. I don't know if the speeder even existed or this guy was just going to the coffee shop. I don't know, because you never see a car, because it was one of the dash cam videos, and you never see the car speeding. I don't know. It wasn't, this was a suspect running from a murder scene. It was just he's hauling ass because he's supposedly going to try to catch a speeder. Long story short, he tops a blind hill and hits this old guy on a Harley and kills him. kills him. Because he's chasing a speeder at probably, I would guess, 120 plus miles an hour. You know, through down a road with blind hills and lots of side streets and driveways and to catch a speeder. And he clips this guy on his Harley and kills him. And then there's another part of the video where this other cop is pulling up afterwards. The ambulance is already there and he catches up and he gets out and he's talking to the cop that did this. And of course, the first thing out of his words are you okay? Yeah, I just got a scratch. Yeah, we don't care about the guy splattered all over the highway that was minding his own damn business. Officer safety. We got to make sure the officer, the cops are safe. And of course, the point is, I'm reading through the comments on this video. We need to wrap up. I got to get in the Christian specific segment. But what got me was the majority of the comments in the video, for the video, were just 100, were like 90% of the comments were just ate up badge lickers. Like, I feel so sorry for the officer. No, seriously. You listen to this show, you probably shaking your head just like I was. Oh, I feel so bad for the trooper because he has to live with this. Well, yeah, I feel worse for the guy that was minding his own damn business and this cop tried to whip around him on the right and hit him and splattered him all over the road and killed him. I kind of feel sorry, more sorry for him and his family, honestly, than officer safety who got a scratch out of the whole damn thing. There are people like, they should find the guy that was speeding that started all this and charge him with murder. Yes, it's the speeder's fault. That the cop, the speeder didn't hit nobody. Speeder didn't hit nobody and kill nobody. It was this damn cop that never even, like I say, you never even see the speeder on the video. It's not like he was right behind the car. You never seen the car he was allegedly chasing. I'm not sure the car existed. But these comments are just almost all of them. Like I say, 90% of them are completely uncritical and they're just badge licking. They're just, oh, these troopers, I tell you, they go through so much to keep us safe. That's what I say. I would just get this vision, like you come home and this guy's banging your wife. And at first you're mad, but then you realize it's a cop. So you sit there in the cuck chair and thank you for your service, sir. Is she doing a good job? I tell you what, it is. It's sickening. It's sickening. What the hell is that? And that's why I say this is like this weird inverted. Like you can talk about black people all day long you want to, but this is this weird inverted thing that white people do, and I don't get it. I feel like I got a lot more right to talk about this because I'm white. So what the hell, white people? What is this badge licking thing? It's disgusting. Stop. You know, I'm not saying like you should go around and be an asshole to the cops, but I mean, really, I don't get it. I mean, they just are what they are. On the rare occasion that I'm stopped, and that's not very often, honestly, like years and years go by. Last time I was stopped was last summer, and that's just because cop was letting me know that I had a brake light out, and I probably wanted to get that fixed. It didn't even give me a written warning. But I don't sit there and like these people, you know, and it's like they get pulled over. They get pulled over, and the cop comes up, and they immediately start with the, yes, sir. No, sir. What can I do for you, sir? Yes, sir. I'm not going to suck this cop. I'm sorry. I'm not going to suck up. Let's say it that way. I'm not going to suck up to some damn cop. I'm not going to sit here and be like a belligerent asshole and be like, how dare you? What are you stopping me for? Give me a written warning. I'm going to tear this up and throw it in your face. That just makes me an asshole. I'm not going to do that, but I'm not going to do this. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir, daddy cop. I respect you so much, officer, sir. Officer, sir. Yeah. Do you want to see my wife's? Never mind. I don't get that. White people used to not do that. I don't do that still. And I guess I'm showing age. I don't know. What the hell is that? You tell me, because I don't get it. Aside from the fact that I think it's their way of basically like they view the police as that counter. You know, they don't have the freedom to just speak up and say, well, you know, I really think government policy should quit encouraging, you know, black crime to be what it is. You know, these roving gangs of youth go in and wipe entire stores out. And then the stores close, which does not help the black community. And we used to not have this. We have it now because of government policy, which is to not prosecute these crimes. So, you know, I don't think that's good. They're afraid to say that because that could be racist. And that is the cardinal sin of modern day clown world. And so they do this whole other thing where they feel like they're saying that, but they're not saying that. You know, they're scared to death to say, you know, Oh, I would never say white lives matter. That's racist and evil. And they'll be first ones to throw a rock at you if you said, what about white lives matter? Oh, you're one of those racists. These very same people. But then they will do the whole blue lives matter. Blue. There ain't no blue people. You know, there's various shades of brown. There's various shades of black. There's various assortments of white. And there's various Asian people. That's pretty much it. Well, there's red people. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to lead the Indians out. There's various shades. I ain't never seen no blue person. A person turns blue when they're dead. What is that? There ain't no blue people. Blue lives matter. Because they're too scared to say, well, you know, white people, you know, white, if you're going to say black lives matter, white lives matter. Or you're not even allowed now to say all lives matter because that's racist too. Because it implies that white lives might matter. And these very same people, they will go on. Like if you go out and say white lives matter, they'd be the same people to go, oh, I don't agree with your racism now. Come on. But blue lives, I love the blue lives. Anyway, it's weird. It's disgusting. It used to not be that way. Like I said, if you're a younger person, like, I don't know, under 40, under 30 for sure, go watch Smokey and the Bandit, the original one. I didn't care for any of the sequels. They were stupid. But the original Smokey and the Bandit. And watch Convoy. Watch some of these old movies from the 70s. That's how white people used to regard the cops, you know? I mean, they didn't do this weird badge-licking, worshiping hero crap. That they do now. It's a weird thing. It's not normal. Anyway, that's my gift to you. If you've never seen it, go watch these old movies. You can probably watch them for free somewhere. Okay, we got to get in. This show is a gift that keeps on giving. You get something, whether you ask for it or not, you get something. Anyway, we got to do. You know what to do. Come on. Without further ado, we got to keep on rolling. I know I'm going to run late. I'm looking at the time. We're going to run really late today. So we got to keep on rolling. You do get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. And as we kick off this week's Christian-specific segment, we're going to go back to listener-supporter mailbag. Durka asks, how does God feel about our rejoicing at the suffering and death of our enemies? And by enemies, I mean our existential threat type of enemies, our non-Christian enemies who will likely never, ever repent and come to Jesus and who devote their earthly existence to all that is unholy. I recall a Parish of the Patriots episode a while back where you addressed the faulty MCC position on hippie Jesus' interpretation of love thy enemy, but I can't remember if you went into how we should regard the children of the devil. How does the biblical concept of love deal with those who are irredeemably wicked and unrepentant? And I did give an email response. This came through email, and I did give an email response, but I thought this would be real good here to talk about here and honestly to get into perhaps a little more depth. I mean, I kind of just did a quick email response. When I answer emails, I'm usually doing like multiple other things. I got other things going on. Sometimes you get a quickie answer, and I thought we'd get into this a little bit because I think this is a real good stuff to get into. I always say the first thing you don't want to do is reject the MCC thing that you'll see over and over again, which is to do this fake piousness and to lie to yourself and to lie to other people, you know, and act like, you know, you're really personally sad that this horrible, horrible, wicked, ungodly person is now dead. You know, I'm maybe we should try to refrain from, as you say, rejoicing over it, but don't lie to yourself. Look, don't, you know, God is never going to tell you, never has and never will tell you to lie to yourself and then by extension to lie to other people. And then you wind up what? Lying in your prayers. Oh, Lord, I pray for this person, even though they were off track and they didn't live there. I pray, God, that you will forgive them. And that isn't what you really feel. That isn't what you really think. You think this person got their comeuppance. You should be honest about it. You know, and I think you get to the answer to these things when you're honest about it. So if you lie to yourself like the MCC people do and lie to yourself and pretend like you're sad that this horrible, wicked person is now finally dead or whatever, you know, and you can never get to the truth and you won't ever actually address, you know, come close to addressing things the possible, you know, the way you should. You know, I mean, and I approach this way and because I've got my own faults. I do. I got my own fault. I'm the one that always says I hope it's allowed. You know, I hope it's allowed in the kingdom of God to like stand on the other side of the chasm from hell and like mock some of these people because they act so arrogant, you know, when you're on the other side, be like, you were wrong, weren't you? Huh? Remember all them times you kept going on about how stupid my beliefs were? You don't believe? Spaghetti fairy in the side, whatever, in the sky, or was Sky Daddy, whatever mockery you did. How's it feel down there? Kind of hot, ain't it? You know what I'm doing up here? That's right. Living the best eternal life. Troll dance across the chasm. I have my own weaknesses. It's probably not going to be a lie. They're probably going to be like, no, you can't do that. You're not supposed to want to. I have my own failings. The Bible says, you know, because there's different kinds of people. You know, you said that you mentioned, Durga mentions here, you know, those who are the children of the devil. And you have to understand, we talked last week, you know, if you're in Christ, you're under grace. You're under a different system. You were under grace. We went into that last week. I believe it was last week. And no, scratch that. It was 2 weeks ago. They all kind of run together after a while. Show 2 weeks ago, we talked about the difference of being under grace and being under the law and why the law still exists. If you missed that show, you need to check it out. I think it's a really important show to understand why the law still remains. It hasn't gone away. As a lot of Christian churches teach, like the law has been abolished. It is not. It still remains and how that works. And anyway, we talked about how, you know, in Christ, we're under grace. We're under a different system. But the law exists. Those who are not in grace, who have not accepted Christ, they will be judged fairly, and they will be judged justly, and they will be judged by the law. That's why the law exists. They're not under grace. They're not under Christ, so they're judged by the law. Now, that means everybody's going to be treated fairly. Nobody is going to be, and I'm not going to just really get off into this because we kind of pretty much already covered this a couple of weeks ago, but something I really didn't mention then and I want to mention now because it kind of comes up here in this note is when you understand that everybody's going to be judged fairly, nobody's going to be treated unfairly by God. He is just and everybody will be judged justly. If we're under grace, we're under a different system of our spiritual growth, but everybody that's not under grace is judged by the law. However, those who are actual children of the devil, this is a different breed of people. Again, Jesus illustrated this clearly in his parable of the wheat and the tares, or as I just like to say, wheat and the weeds. There are some people who are not wheat. They're not wheat. They were never going to be wheat. They had no potential to become wheat because they were planted here on this earth by their father, the devil. Jesus says, he told the Pharisees, you're doing the work of your father, the devil. You speak his language. He was a liar and a murderer. Look, people who are of the devil are people that are weeds. They're not misguided weeds. You're going to run into people. There's people out there. They had the potential to be, you know, flourishing wheat. They just never made it. They fell on the shallow soil, whatever. But they did have the potential. But there are those who are in this world who are weeds. They are of the devil. Now, if God judges everybody justly, and we know he does, those people will be judged justly in that they will just simply be sent back to their father. You see, grace and even the law are for those who are wheat that have produced or those who at least had the potential to be wheat and maybe stunted growth, whatnot. You know, you've got the grace and the law system. But those who are of their devil, or who are of their father, I'm sorry, the devil, God in his justice will give them what they deserve, which is simply send them back to their daddy. He's going to send them straight back. They don't need to be judged under the law. They're just going to get sent back to their father, the devil. The chaff is burned, as it says in the Bible. They just go straight back to their father because that's the just thing to do. God's not going to keep them away from their daddy, Satan. They're going straight back to hell. You don't have to worry. Grace definitely isn't for them. And really, even the law isn't for them. They are of their father, the devil. They're going back to their father, the devil. Now, that's for those who are here in this world who are simply, they are of Satan. They are children of the devil. And then you have people who are just fools, you know, and they just, they they refuse to accept the way the world works, and they're fools. And I don't mean that as a name calling thing. Like so many people, you know, they throw these terms around. They don't think about what they mean. I mean fools in the biblical sense. They are fools in the biblical sense. And you know, fools in the Bible are treated with mockery. You know, I mean, they just they really are. This is what happens because they should serve as an example to everybody else. You know, you don't want to be the fool. And I mean, fools wind up, they'll just wander off into a pit. I mean, a good example to me as a good example as a fool is on my Friday Daily Nationalist a couple shows back. Did the thing about the social justice woman, you know, who's, what was it, working tirelessly to quote unquote decriminalize black bodies, whatever that means. And she wound up meeting her end from a basically career violent black criminal who beat her to death. I mean, you know, that is the result of the actions of a fool, because they've created this fake reality. They deny the truth, because if you deny reality, you're denying the truth. And they deny the truth, and they go chasing after these fantasies. They're just fools in the biblical sense. And ultimately, a fool winds up metaphorically falling into a pit. And you just gotta shake your head. I think overall, to answer this question, as far as our attitude, again, we don't lie to ourselves and act like we really feel bad for somebody, because no, we don't do that. I think the correct answer, or at least what I have come to as a correct answer, is to always remember that God cannot be mocked. And people get their comeuppance. Some of them, we have to wait a while. We have to wait until the eternal realm where they get the ultimate comeuppance. But sometimes, you know, they get their comeuppance here. And we just have to kind of be humble and remember, you know, the Lord's authority is real. And you violate reality, you violate God's laws, and it does not turn out well for you, because reality is what it is. And I don't know. I just ultimately always try to, I will look, you know, when something happens to these people and kind of shake my head and be, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I feel bad for them, but ultimately I'm glad God's on my side and not an enemy, as it is for these people. They think, because it doesn't, it's not going to go well for them. I think it's just ultimately the way we should handle it is to harness ourselves, you know, harness these things and remember to glorify God and remember, wow, you know, glad he's on my side. You look at him and be like, yeah, that's what you get. That's what you get. Glad God is on our side. And we keep on moving. It's like going past a car wreck. You know, you go past a car wreck, don't hold up traffic. You might look over there and be like, ooh, glad that's not me. But I'm just going to keep looking down. Ultimately, I can't dwell on that. I'm not going to celebrate over. I'm keeping my lane. Keep on doing what I got to do. So yeah, hopefully I kind of answered that question. I hate fake piousness. I do. I hate fake righteousness. There was a story here a while back. Some guy's son got murdered by some woman. And, you know, they were on drugs. And the woman pretty obviously is demon possessed. And she kills this guy in a brutal way. And she's at trial. And she's a horrible, wicked, evil person. And the victim's daddy does the whole thing of standing up there and asking for leniency from the court for the killer of his son. And starts talking about, well, I know, you know, the usual MCC type of thing. You know, well, I know God, but, you know, I forgive her. And you're supposed to what? You know, love your neighbors, yourself. What do I want to say? This fake piousness, acting like, oh, you love the person, you forgive the person who killed your son. This is a extreme disrespect for your son. And if you can't love your own flesh and blood, you don't love that person. You don't love yourself. You're lying. This gets back to that you're lying thing. And we're never commanded to do that. I hate that fakery. Don't be standing up there in the court talking about, oh, I forgive them. And please be lenient on them, even though they brutally murdered my child. That ain't real. You're lying. You're lying to everybody. And if you're not lying, then you didn't even love your own child. How are you going to love anybody else? If you can't love your own child, how are you going to stand up there and act like you love a stranger? Shut up. You're just virtue signaling on the corpse of your child. Sickening. I hate that crap. It's fake. It's gay. Stop it. Just, you know, I mean, look, you shouldn't let it eat you up, you know, and people, a lot of times, you know, when they say, well, it's healthy to forgive, well, it's healthy not to let something eat you up. You know, it's vengeance is mine. It's written, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. You should put faith in those statements, in that statement. The Lord will repay, whether it's in this life, and hopefully it is, but understand that even if you don't get to see it in this life, God is going to repay. That person will be judged. They're the devil. They're going straight to their father, the devil. If they're not, then they will be judged under the law. God has got this. Don't be coming up here talking about, oh, I forgive them, even though they're completely unrepentant. They're I hate that fakery. What else? What else can we talk about this week? Let's read something out of the Bible. Let's do that. Let's keep on going. Romans. Let's look at Romans chapter 9, verses 32 and 33. Wherefore, because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by the works of the law, for they stumbled at that stumbling stone. As it is written, behold, I lay in Sion a stumbling stone and rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. I've really become very aware that there are these different stages in life, and you have to accept these stages as they come and also let them go as they're gone. This is something I'm currently working on myself, is understanding that the things of the past, the things of your youth, you know, they're really gone, and accepting them. Because what you give up, you get something else. You have to let go of previous stages in order to take on the next stage of your life. Now, with regards to what we read here, the people had misinterpreted the entire point of the law. And because they had it in their head that somehow salvation came through the law, when that was never its purpose. It was never intended as such. It serves its own purpose. But because they had, that's the stumbling stone. And they received the law, and yet it was time to move on to that next stage. You know, it was time. The law set things up so that God could then come and also offer grace. This is where salvation comes from. And again, we had a pretty good discussion on this a couple weeks ago. If you missed it, I would again encourage you to go check that out. But that set everything up so that the Lord could then come, so that Jesus Christ could come, and we could be established under the grace system by faith. But you see, it's like the people had got it in their head that salvation was through the law, and they couldn't let the law go. Like, that was the end all. Like, God had done this, and he's not doing anything else. He's stopping with that. Well, that was just leading up to the next thing. You have to accept that next stage, which was grace, which is much better. You want to get into it, but they stumbled on it. They could not accept that because they had it set in their head. This is likewise, the people at the time, they got it in their head that, you know, the Messiah was going to come back as a physical king to reestablish ancient Israel, to reestablish a country, kick the Romans out. They had this set in their head. And so when the Messiah shows up, they don't understand it. Well, where's this guy? He's supposed to throw the Romans out and give us our country back. Even though you can look it back and realize that makes no sense. You know, when it's written in the Old Testament, you know, talking about a seed of David that will reign on his throne forever. Well, you know, there's not going to be a person that's going to live forever and hold up your physical kingdom. That doesn't make any sense. But they had this in their head. The Messiah meant a new line of David, one of the line of David was going to show up and give them their country back. And they missed the whole thing because they're still stuck. You know, they're still stuck on the past. They're still stuck. They miss it. They miss it when it comes around. If you don't let those old things go, those old stages go, you miss the new thing. Now, because they had it in their head that the Messiah was going to show up and fix all their problems, that's what they were looking for in a Messiah. The Messiah is going to show up and he's going to fix all our problems here on earth. And we can sit here with hindsight and say, well, that was silly. They had this wrong idea. They thought the Messiah is going to show up and fix their kingdom, throw the Romans out and fix all their problems. Aren't they silly? Let me ask this question. How is that any different from the evangelicals today? They have the same idea, don't they? They think Jesus is going to come back and fix all their problems. They don't think they really have to do anything except bide their time, wait for the rapture. Jesus is going to show up and he's going to fix all their problems. They have the exact same, that's what I'm saying. They have the exact same mistaken notion as those same people would sit there and say, oh yeah, they missed the Messiah. They were so stupid. And then they have the same misconceived notion. They still have the exact same idea that Jesus is going to return and fix all their problems. So they just got to wait. They just got to bide their time. Instead of, well, we got to work. You know, it's discouraging. We live in this fallen world. And this is why I don't try to get too hung up, you know, on reading end times prophecy. Because people get hung up on that and you get a fatalistic attitude. In other words, it doesn't matter. Look, we know that the Antichrist is going to get more and more powerful. And I've read these prophecies that I don't really understand, but I've interpreted them to mean that no matter what, we're doomed until Jesus comes back. And you get this fatalistic attitude and you get like the evangelicals. Well, there's no point in even trying. I'm going to sit here and wait for Jesus to come and fix all my problems. Just as these people missed it because they were waiting for the Messiah to come kick the Romans out. He's gonna give us our country back and he's going to be king forever here on earth or something. We missed the whole point. That same fatalistic attitude. So I understand certain things of these, you know, you get into prophecies and you look at the things going on. I understand a certain amount of this. But I'm telling you, don't get hung up on that because you're going to get a fatalistic attitude. We got a job to do. Jesus is going to show up. When he shows up, we ain't got no, you know, that's another thing. These evangelicals, they act like if they do a certain thing, they're going to force Jesus to hurry up and get here. You know, you've heard that. Like we got to do this, and this, and then Jesus is going to show up. Like they're going to hurry him up. Like he's going to operate on their schedule. How silly is that? Look, you got a job to do. And Jesus told us, we're told specifically, you can be good shape when the master returns and you're just simply doing what you're supposed to be doing. Don't be worrying about when he gets here. Look, you got a job to do. You just need to be doing your job. And don't get hung up on all this. Because otherwise you get the fatalistic attitude. Next thing you know, you like the evangelicals. Well, Jesus is going to be doomed anyway, so I'm not going to bother trying. So I'll just wait around. And when Jesus shows up, he's going to fix everything. He's going to fix all my problems. You can be like those people. You completely miss the Messiah. You don't want Jesus showing up and you're sitting on your ass. Look, you got a job to do. We got work to do. We just, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I mean, we understand the times we live in, and it's fine to understand. You should. You want to understand the type of world you live in, the reality. At the end of the day, as a believer, we got a job to do. Let's do it. We just got to go about and do our work. When Jesus shows up, he shows up. And when he shows up, if I'm still walking around on this earth, I want him to show up and find me doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Then let the cards fall where they may. I don't know. These are crazy times we live in, you know, no doubt about it. And I find it interesting that people walk around in denial of reality. You know, people that just stumble around and they've lost their way. People rejected God. And we talk about it. I've talked about it multiple times about how people wind up inventing basically these weirdo religions, you know, just trying to satisfy their spiritual need instead of saying, well, we've got this thick book. We've got an entire history of people who have sought answers to the spiritual. Why not just look at that? But they don't. Instead, they invent this weird spiritualism to try to answer their questions. Like nobody has considered, you know, nobody has considered these questions before because they're so special. I get to come up with something brand new. I've invented this new spiritualism. It is funny to walk around, though, and see people that, like, bumble through life and act like the devil isn't real. You know, we understand as believers that these are very evil times that we live in. And people don't address the question, you know, like, we think, even as Christian believers, sometimes we fall for this. But, you know, we have this idea, like, the spiritual. We talk about, you know, the spiritual, you know, spiritual battles and stuff. But, like, that's some sort of unseen thing. And we never ponder the question, what if it's a lot more physical than what we think it is. What if it's a lot more physical and in this world than what we want to admit? And I would argue that there's ample evidence that such is the case. This will scare people to death that go around and just pretend like, oh, no, that's not real. Because then it begs the question of what are you doing? I mean, if you were surrounded by like physical, I mean, if the spiritual battle is a lot more in this world than you think, what does that mean? I read an article here a while back, it was like an interview with some musician. I don't know who it is, but I don't know who a lot of these people are. It was some former musician that was, I guess, semi-popular or something. I don't know. But this person came to God, and he was talking about his days, you know, in the music industry. And there was one thing that really, really caught me from this interview. And the guy didn't really go into in depth about it, but he says, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, of course, but he said, look, I was present at like high offices in the record industry where they were literally holding satanic prayers over an album, whatever that means. They were basically holding a satanic ritual over this music that they were releasing. Now, you can sit there and scoff at that and mock it and think about it. But before you do, you look at these things. All of these videos, it has satanic imagery. I mean, it does. I don't mean like, you know, you if you close one eye, you know, and play the record backwards. I'm not talking about, I mean, like in your face, satanic imagery. I always say, you know, I've observed that everything Satan does is an inversion of what God does. So everything the Antichrist does is an inversion of what Christ does. As Christian believers, we profess our faith publicly by our actions, our deeds, and even, you know, in speaking. We profess our faith publicly. The inversion of that, the Antichrist demands the same. So when you see these music videos and every one of these musicians, every single one, they're doing what? The triangles. I held my hand up like that. I shouldn't be doing that. They're holding up the triangle imagery. They're doing the one eye. They're doing all of this over and over. They're all doing the exact same imagery in your face. And what do you do with people? Well, they're just being edgy. It isn't very edgy if every other musician's doing the exact same damn thing, is it? It's got to be something else, doesn't it? Well, when you understand that Satan does everything inverse of God, Antichrist does everything inverse of Christ, he's demanding a public confession. These people require to go out and announce that they have signed the deal, they've sold their soul to Satan. They have to do a public confession of such. Now, you want to know what's really bad is if you have people that get sucked into this and they take the deal and justify it in their mind, say, well, they want me to do this. It's fine. I don't believe in any of that crap anyway. Look, it doesn't matter if you believe in it or not. You are making the deal. You sign in the deal, go, well, I'll sign a deal with the devil because I don't think the devil's real. Ha! I outsmarted everybody. It doesn't matter. Satan doesn't care if you know he's real or understand he's real or not. If you sign the deal, you're still going to destruction. You don't get to say, well, I didn't think you were real, so it doesn't count. It does not work that way. Whenever I think about it, whenever I talk about this, I always think of somebody in particular. This, to me, stands out as an example of how this happens. There's this Japanese young woman named Minda Ren. If you watch anime, you know who I'm talking about. And for those who don't, which is probably most of you, bear with me because there is a point to this. Anyway, this young woman was doing like YouTube videos, you know, where she would sing, you know, and she would cover songs, you know, sing songs that are out there, you know, anime music. She's Japanese. She lives in Japan. And she'd do these Japanese anime songs, you know, and she'd do cover music. She's doing them on YouTube or whatever. Then one day, all of a sudden, out of the blue, well, she's doing original music for actual shows on TV, and now she is a popular singer just overnight. And I'm reading people commenting going, wow, this is somebody just achieved the dream. Look, she got discovered and she became an overnight. She's now this popular singer doing what she dreamed of. She was covering anime songs and now she's doing original. Isn't this great? And her very first original song, I watched a video for it. You know, look, I kind of thought it was a catchy song. I listened to anime music. Don't judge me. And the very first one, the release, I watched the video for it. And I kid you not, the entire video were neon triangles flashing at the screen and one eye triangles on her face and just this ridiculous whoring of Satan. Whoring to Satan. It was disgusting. And I'm thinking, does she even know what she signed up for? Because obviously this is such a blatant, I mean, the entire thing. I don't look, and I don't understand. I admit to you, I don't understand the obsession with the triangle symbol for Satan, but it's obviously a symbol for Satan. I mean, it is. If you like jumped into the world, you were some kind of alien or something, you just, or let's say you got hit on the head. And you got amnesia. Now you don't understand anything in the world around you. You don't know who anybody is. It's like it's a brand new day. If you walked around and observed things, pretty soon you would understand. You wouldn't understand what it was about. But you could come to understand that the cross is a symbol of Christianity. You would pretty quickly figure that. You might not understand what it represents or the story behind it or any of that, but you would understand that when you saw somebody wearing a cross or a cross up on a building, you would understand that it had religious significance. It's like that with this triangle bullshit. I don't understand the actual meaning for saying, some of y'all probably do. Y'all probably going to send me an email, explain it to me, educate my ignorant self. But it is a satanic image because they do it over and over. They do the hand sign with the triangle and the one eye. And this girl, this young woman, her very first view was like neon ones just blasting at the screen over and over and over and over and one eye and a triangle over the one eye. It was sickening. And I'm thinking, it's not worth it, darling. You know, it's not. You think it is. You think this is some sort of dream come true. It's not. But this tells us, what if, this comes back to this question we started posing here. What if it's a lot more in this world than we think it is? And people see that imagery and just go, oh, well, they're being edgy. You know, they're doing Illuminati. I just came up with a new term, the Illuminati. Forget the Illuminati. You got to get up to the higher level, the Illuminati. They're just being edgy. Look, they're not just being edgy. That's silly. Being edgy would be doing something different. Every one of them making the exact same gestures, the exact same imagery, that there's something else going on. It's a lot more in this world than people want to realize. And they want to be blind to that because if they look at it, then they got to say, well, what about me then? What does this mean about me? It's not worth it. If somebody like that gets lured in, it's not worth it. You have to understand, those who serve Satan, he doesn't like them. He hates them. That's why you'll often see somebody who takes the ticket and makes the deal. And then after a while, they're real prominent. And then after a while, they get like thrown under the bus and chewed up or whatever. You have to understand, like Satan thinks that's funny. He doesn't make these deals because, I like this person. No, they're just tools. You have to understand the whole rift. I believe the entire rift in heaven was over the fact, because it's written in the New Testament, it said, don't you know we will have authority over angels? So when God started this whole thing, I think these angels that sided with Satan, because you have to say, why did these angels side with Satan? Well, I think it's because they were like, no, man, these people who make it to heaven are going to have authority over us? I don't think so. They hate you. I love these idiots. I love these idiots. No, I shouldn't say it like that. You gotta be amazed at these idiots that like do this whole Satanism thing. I'm not talking about we've been discussing, like the real hardcore, this is Satan working in the physical realm and people serving him in the physical realm type thing. I'm talking about these like meme Satanists, that pose in front of like their pentagrams or whatever the hell, and they go around and they're like, because you see, I'm going to worship Satan and whatnot. And then, I'm going to have like some position, see. I'm going to go to hell, but it's going to be okay because I'm going to have a position in it. No, you're not. They hate you. This was the whole point. This was the whole cause of all this to begin with, is because they hate your guts. You can sit there and try to be cute about it all you want to. They're going to grind you up and laugh at you. They're not going to sit there and go, well, thank you for all that praise you gave me. No, he hates you. People that take the ticket, all of it is temporary. Because A, everything you get in this world is temporary. Anything. So when Satan offers you something, you know, oh, you're going to be a famous music recording artist. You just got to do these things. You know, it's that money is never yours. You get money. There's two things. Listen, there are two things that will lead a man to destruction faster than anything. Two things, money and women. Those two things will lead a man to destruction faster than anything. When Satan offers you money, it's always temporary. He's going to get it back. That is never yours to begin. You think it is. It's in your bank account. It's in your name. But it'd be taken away from you at any point in time, and it probably will. Well, obviously, it definitely will. At some point, you're going to leave this world. Then what's it going to do for you? But even in this world, it's always temporary. Most of the time, people get offered these sorts of things when they're younger. And they do, because the older you get, the more you realize everything is temporary. You know, it really is. Everything is temporary. The older you get, Satan ain't going to come up somebody like my age. You know, he ain't going to offer. Look, I know for a fact, Satan ain't never going to offer me no carrot. Oh, he's going to come at me with a stick. You know, because when you realize how short life is, he ain't got much to offer to tempt you with. But younger people are different. You go to a young man, say in his 20s, and offer him, you know, some sort of fortune and fame or whatever, money and women, usually is what it comes down to. Offers him money and women. And they're thinking, man, this is totally worth it. I'm going to live my life as a star. I'm going to live my life as a star. I'm going to have money, women. I'm going to have all of these things. And it goes by really, really fast, assuming you even get to keep it for any amount of time at all. He has the option of jerking the rug out from under you at his discretion at any point in time. And here's the thing. Look, if you're not under grace, people that take these deals in general and people that just kind of wander through life in particular, Satan can do whatever to them. These people, and you might think, because we're in a spiritual battle. You know, and we understand, we feel the pressure. We're in conflict with the world. That's what being a believer is we're always going to be in conflict with this world. And sometimes I think we as believers, we lose sight of the fact that that puts us in a better position than what you think. You look at one of these ticket takers. And you have to understand that they're at Satan's mercy. When they sign the deal, when they make the deal, Satan can do with them whatever he wants, and he hates them. If they're useful, he'll use them for a while, make a mockery out of them, whatever. But if not, he jerked that rug out from under and destroy them. Now, we're in conflict with the world, and we feel that pressure sometimes, a lot of times. We feel that pressure, but understand the difference is, yes, Satan's not going to have a carrot for us, only a stick. We're going to be in conflict. Yes, we're going to be in conflict with the world, but, there's so far he can go. How can I put this a different way? When you are a believer, God isn't going to keep you from being in conflict with the world. That's what it means. You are going to be in conflict with the world. But Satan can't just blindly come at you because he might run into the Holy Spirit. He might run into God. And he does not want to do that. You see, one of these people that takes a ticket, they're his playthings. They're at his mercy, and he has none for them. He hates them. People wandering around, and they just say, well, I don't know anything about God. I don't care anything about that, whatever. Satan can do whatever he wants to them if he gets the fancy to do so. We are in active conflict with the world, and Satan can come at us with a stick, but he's got to be careful because he doesn't want to accidentally go too far and step over a line. Read the book of Job to get an understanding of what this looks like. Doesn't mean he can't whack us with a stick. It doesn't mean he can't come against us, but he has to be really, really careful how he goes about it because he doesn't want to inadvertently step over the line and run into God, to run into the Holy Spirit with us. So He has to try to be careful how he does that. In this manner, even though we are in conflict with the world, we're very cognizant of this conflict, and you know, it gets to be bearing down on us sometimes. Understanding this, we're in better shape than these other people because they're at Satan's mercy. And again, he has no mercy. If he gets a whim to destroy them, he just destroy them. Somebody that takes the deal, now they're a recording artist and they're a star and whatever. If he gets a whim that it would be funny to publicly humiliate and destroy them, he'll just do that just because he thinks it's funny. This is just because he hates them. He will always hate, and they have no protection. See, at least with us, we're in conflict, and like I said, it wears down on you after a while and whatnot. But at least we know that he's got to be careful what he does. Like I say, if you look at the book of Job in the Old Testament, this kind of illustrates for you how that works. You know, okay, I'm going to do this to Job, you know, but he's got to be careful because God says, well, don't kill him. You know, you don't step over that line. And he knows he's got to watch out for that. If that makes any sense, we're more protected. Because though, like I said, he's going to cause us problems. No doubt about it. But there's a line there. He's got to be careful he doesn't step on. He don't want to step off in there and accidentally run into the Holy Spirit. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of the entire show today. Of course, always, I hope you get something out of the Christian specific segment. That's the thing. If you get something out of that, I hope you got something out of it. Thank you, all of y'all who put something in the play. I do appreciate it. I do appreciate every one of you who tunes in and listens every week. I hope you got something out of it, and I hope you'll be back next week for the Parish of the Patriots.